All right, Health and Human Services Finance Committee will come to order. Clerk will note the roll, quorum being present. We have minutes from March 29th, 2016. Representative Grubenhagen moves approval of minutes from March 29th, 2016. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of approval of the minutes, please say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The minutes are approved, 1-0. Representative Zerwas will be first up today. Representative Zerwas would like to move his bill, which is House File 1582. Representative Zerwas, to your bill.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 1582 is the most exciting bill to ever come through Health and Human Services reform, and it's exciting to be back here in Health and Human Services Finance. It is the body-piercing bill, back for yet another fun hearing. Mr. Chair, there is a DE-1 amendment, but I'm tempted not to offer it, because it would put the bill in the form, it would have the bill in the form of when we had in HHS reform, the conversation we got to enjoy then. But in the interest of time, I'll offer the DE-1 amendment.
Representative Zerwas offers the DE-1 amendment. The DE-1 amendment is before us. Discussion to the DE-1 amendment. Representative Zerwas, could you just maybe just describe a little bit of the changes that we're looking at between the DE-1 and the underlying bill?
Mr. Chair, committee, I have some testifiers here who can help walk through the changes.
All right. Mr. Goodnow, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Goodnow. I'm here on behalf of Almost Famous Body Piercing. And the DE-1 amendment would put the bill in the same format as was carried in the House Omnibus bill last year, with one exception. It changes the notification requirements from 90 days to 60 days and notifying a licensee of a renewal. It does change from the first engrossment of House File 1582 by removing the prohibited piercing section, and that is the major substantial change with this amendment. Mr. Chairman, I would defer to Representative Zerwas if there's any questions about what each one of those piercings means.
All right. That's good advice, Mr. Goodnow, and we can direct that from committee questions to Representative Zerwas. Representative Liebling.
Thank you,
ready.
Mr. Chair. I was just noticing that Mr. Goodnow seemed to be blushing before we even started. So, but I don't think, you know, we talked about this before. I think we all remember it. But I am, did I just understand you to say, though, that the part about the prohibited piercings is being removed, right? And I have to say, I'm concerned about that. You know, this is one of the rare licensing bills that I actually support, because, you know, I'm very skeptical about a lot of licensing that goes on around here and over, you know, really over-regulation of professions. But this is one that I think it's really a serious health issue. And I think those prohibited piercings are a really serious health issue. And so, Representative Zerwas, maybe you could explain to us, I'm not trying to make light of it at all, but why are you removing that and therefore essentially allowing those piercings to be done in the state? You know, I'd really like to know that.
Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Liebling, this was the move that was made at the end of last session in order to be a part of the omnibus bills we moved forward. In consultation with the Department of Health, this was one of their wish lists. It wasn't something they were married to at the end of the day. The big change, the substantive change going forward in this bill is looking at first, rather than number of hours spent at a place of employment while waiting to get licensed, we're now doing a number of procedures or piercings done. That's the substantive training change that the department is comfortable with moving forward. If you have a floor amendment, later on. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know if Kevin has a...
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and additionally, I believe the testimony last year when this provision was pulled out at that time, there were some questions asked about how many complaints the Department of Health has had on these prohibited piercings, and I believe the answer was none at that point. I don't know if that maybe has changed since then. It also adds to the fiscal note, and this fund is being challenged right now with, I mean, they have some issues with regard to the cost of enforcing the current overall body art laws, and so we wanted to try to minimize the fiscal impact on the Department of Health at this point with this legislation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ross.
And Mr. Goodnell brings up a good point. We've gone several rounds with the department. We had a zero fiscal note at the end of session last year. Then, as session kicked up this year, we had a small fiscal note on this bill. We're back now with a revised fiscal note for $0 again. And as Mr. Goodnell stated, this fund is already facing some financial hardships. And so any requirement or attempt to monitor prohibited piercings list and follow up on investigation stuff, the fund doesn't have the money to support that. And we don't have the money in this fiscal note to support that.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Zerwas, I mean, I'm fine with the other change you described. I think that makes total sense. But, you know, when you look at what these prohibited piercings are, I mean, eyelid piercing, you know, one mistake, somebody getting an injury from this is a whole heck of a lot more than $18,000. Now, maybe it doesn't come out of the same pocket, but good grief. I can't support removing this from this bill. I just think that, you know, and whether they can even enforce it isn't really the issue. People need to know that this is stuff is, you know, that we don't think that these things that are particularly dangerous need to be done. I mean, this is cosmetic. So, I just don't think this is, you know, I hear the invitation to do a floor amendment. You know, I don't know whether I'll take that invitation or not, but... you know, I think this is just pretty serious stuff, and we shouldn't be, you know, it's great to have the training and all of that, and this is our opportunity. We ought to be prohibiting these things.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Zerwas.
And the challenge, again, Representative Liebling, I understand your concern. I understand where you're coming from. The challenge is the minute we do that, whether it's in this committee or as a floor amendment, that's going to put this bill out of balance. It's going to cost money that the special revenue fund doesn't have. And we're going to get significant pushback at that point from the department.
Other discussions to the DEE amendment? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Zerwas, you seem to have also lightened up on some of the other requirements, and I'm looking at the supervision division definitions starting on the amendment at 1.15, and that you have now direct supervision is a different definition than in the original bill, which said that you had to be within the line of sight of the temporary technician who's performing the body art procedure. Now they just have to be within 5 feet. And some of these places can be just little, you know, little partitions. I mean, you could be within 5 feet and be on the other side of a wall and not be able to observe whether or not the temporary licensee is doing it right and catching it before they do something wrong. And so I'm wondering why you're taking out the requirement that they be in the line of sight of the temporary technician.
Mr. Goodnow.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the line of sight issue was something that we discussed with the Department of Health, and we actually feel that the 5 feet is actually a more stringent requirement than the line of sight, because I can see the chairman right now, and that's more than 5 feet away. And so, in a larger facility, you could be in the line of sight, but still not be close enough to see what's actually happening. And I think the agreement was that 5 feet would put you in proximity where you could see what's actually happening.
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Goodnow, actually the original language was within feet, 5 feet, and within the line of sight. And so to me, you are actually taking away that requirement that they be close and observing at the time. And, you know, when you're making a permanent change in someone's body and you're a newbie, you should have someone watching you very closely to make sure that you're not doing it inappropriately. And I don't know why we would weaken this, particularly when you're permitting some pretty risky procedures now by eliminating the piercing prohibitions on eyelids and other things. I wouldn't.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Goodnow.
Representative Loeffler, I don't believe that we have any concerns with putting the old language back in with regard to that. I'm not sure if in health, do you have any concerns? No, in health, the Department of Health is not in there. They don't have a concern about it. I do just want to state that the bill was broader, much broader to begin with, and we were trying to apparently do a lot of things that I don't think we have the ability to do in a short period of time without a broader support within the broader body piercing community. What we really want to do is we would really like, on behalf of Almost Famous, smooth the bill forward so we can deal with the certainty around a lot of these things, minors receiving piercings, and the line of sight issue that you talked about, so we can get that basis done. But we certainly think there's a lot of other things that could be done from a regulatory perspective out there in the future. But at this point, we'd like to move this bill forward so we can at least take this first step. And on behalf of my client, we're committed to working on these issues to make sure that this is an industry that's very safe, and we're willing to work with anybody that's interested in dealing with us on that.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would, since we're not taking out the prohibitions, I really do feel like it has to be a legitimate training and supervision situation. And I know we don't usually do oral amendments, but I would feel more comfortable if we were to insert "and in the line of sight" on line 1.8 as it was in the original bill.
Ms. Aves, could you even incorporate that?
Mr. Chair and members, the oral amendment would be on line 1.8 after feet, insert "and the line of sight."
So Representative Loeffler moves a correction to line 1.8 of the DE1 amendment. After the word "feet," insert "and the line of sight." So line 1.8 would read "establishment and is within 5 feet and the line of sight of temporary licensee who is performing." Is that correct, Representative Loeffler?
Yes.
All those in favor of incorporation of the Loeffler amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Loeffler correction is made. Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, members, that's the DE1 as it stands at this point.
All right. All those in favor of adoption of the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The DE1 is adopted and incorporated into 1582. Discussion to the 1582 as amended. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to take a second to just clarify something for the record as I was discussing the prohibited piercings that are now out of the bill. I want to just say I don't have any, I think people should have the right to modify their bodies in the way they want, and that's not my concern here. I just want to say for the record that my concern is about who would be qualified to do those procedures, just in case anybody's listening and wants to understand what the objection is. And so really it is that under the bill as it now stands, these body artists are now qualified to do any of these procedures, pierce an eyelid and the other things that are in the bill. So I just wanted to clarify that that's my objection.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair.
Yes.
And members, currently, any body artist that puts their time in a piercing shop, not necessarily done enough procedures, but just put the hours in, would be qualified to do those exact same piercings. So, and I understand the concern, and I think if you remember way back to our first iteration, Mr. Goodnow and for his clients, the first attempt at this had several levels of licensure, and what piercings would go with what level of licensure, and the department and other stakeholders kind of pushed back on that and said that was, you know, really an administrative challenge to try to work that in the real world. And so I think I understand some of your concerns, but I think the bill, as it moves forward, as it focuses now on procedures done, not just hours clocked, we think that's going to be a very big move forward for safety of patrons.
Other discussion? Seeing none, Representative Zerwas renews his motion that House File 1582 be recommended to be referred to the General Register as amended. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Members, we're going to take a short recess of approximately 15 minutes, and we will be back at 1:30. Being 1:30, what we are going to do is we will reconvene at the call of the chair, which will probably be after HHS policy this evening in the same room. We'll bring Health and Human Services meeting back to order. Thank everybody for reconvening and apologize particularly to the staff for making folks stick around. What I would like to do is immediately move House File 2772 be recommended to be passed and referred to the General Register. That is my bill, and this is legislation in response to a letter from CMS inviting states to apply for 1115 waiver for substance abuse disorder. The bill directs the Commissioner of DHS to seek the federal waiver and present an update to the legislature by February 1st, 2017. The waiver is budget neutral and will bring substantial amount of additional revenue to improve our continuum of care for individuals with substance abuse disorder. Additionally, the waiver will allow for funding to be used to support long-term recovery services such as transportation, employment, and housing. Many of you on this committee were probably aware of the concerns within our provider community from the recent IMD determination, which disallows our chemical dependency treatment providers for over 16 beds from accepting federal dollars, which includes an estimated 75% of providers in Minnesota. This waiver allows for an exclusion of the IMD rule, which would continue to allow our providers to have more than 16 beds to receive Medicaid funds to treat many of Minnesota's most vulnerable patients. The bill was sent here while we were confirming that there was no fiscal note, and there is none, so I ask for your support and ask that it be moved to the General Register. With that, is there any questions on 2772? Representative Mertens.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just one question. If we pass this into law and get the waiver, when would the appropriation, when would we see money into Minnesota? 17?
Do we have somebody who can answer? Welcome to the committee, Ms. Erickson.
Hi.
Sorry to keep you here so late. Please introduce yourself for the record, and if you can fill in the blanks, that would be great for Representative Murphy.
Thank you. Sarah Erickson, I represent CORI, the Coalition of Recovery Investment. Representative Murphy, we do anticipate 17. It will depend on how long it takes DHS to put together the waiver and then how long it takes CMS to ultimately approve the waiver, but we're hoping for the budget cycle of 2017.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to better understand item 8 on page 2, the exploration of available options for exceptions to the federal IMD exclusion. I assume that's the exclusion you want is that they would be eligible for MA, where right now if you're over 16 beds, you're not. But I'm wondering sort of the long-term vision, because we obviously are moving towards a more community-based, smaller facility sort of approach in general. So I just kind of wanted to have a better understanding. First of all, is that your intent that we not that we can create more, but that we also can get federal funding for them as well? And then where do you see them, the larger facilities, fitting in the future service system?
Well, I think that the larger facilities, and we heard from them, they were really surprised by this and kind of got the rug pulled out from underneath them, so it's an immediate reaction to that. But longer term, they're going to be part of the mix as well, and I think the federal funding represents that. And I don't know if Ms. Erickson has anything more to comment.
No, I agree. I apologize. Linda Berglund, I apologize, was going to be here and it got a little late for her, but HCMC is working on this and very interested in passing a waiver for IMDs, as is other providers. And so, yes, to answer your question, this is the most immediate way that we can get a waiver from the federal government. And I think you as legislators will continue to have discussions about what a future around IMDs will look like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I mean, I have no problem with the existing ones trying to maintain their continued ability to get federal funds. I think there were some changed interpretations that made that different. But I have seen an increasing pressure to create potentially large situations that might trip over this. For example, and I don't know all the rules and regulations, but I've heard of a sober housing situation that has 33 people in a single-family home. I mean, you know, that's not the model that you're looking at, but I'm just thinking that it's good that it's going to be coming back to us so we can better define, you know, sort of what the vision is going forward, because I think we share a common interest in making sure there's some flexibility, but not that it takes us back a few steps.
Thank you. Other questions? With that, I'll renew my motion that 2772 be referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. 2772 is referred to the General Register.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Tice, if you want to make your way up. Representative Tice, welcome back to the committee. This is House File 607. This was passed by the committee during the 2015 session, and it returned here in its interim pursuant to House Rule 4.20. I will move House File 607 be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Tice, we have the bill before us, and I understand that there's an A1 amendment. Is that your amendment?
Yes, it is.
All right. You'd like to discuss the A1 amendment, Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Basically, the A1 just clarifies some of the questions that we had last year, and it was attached to the bill last year as well, and just makes it very clear that that what we're talking about is which facilities we're talking about, which is medical assistance only, and it wouldn't pertain to anything else.
All right. Questions to the A1 amendment? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, to the A1. So if that only refers to Medicaid, not Minnesota Care, then, Representative Tice.
Tice. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling. I do not have that listed as being one of them, so if it does go there, then it wasn't included, but it should be fine to what we're specifically talking about.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tice, I don't have any idea what you just said. Could you please answer that again?
As far as I know, it pertains to medical assistance, and what I have in my notes is Medicaid.
Representative Tice, I think the state-sponsored portion of that would cover both ME and
okay.
Minnesota Care.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Other questions or comments for the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails. A1 is adopted. Representative Tice, your 607 with the amendment A1 adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. What this bill does is prohibits funding for state-sponsored health programs from being used to fund abortions, except to the extent necessary for continued participation in a federal program. And under federal law, known as the Hyde Amendment, federal Medicaid reimbursement for abortions is provided in situations where a woman has physical condition that places her in danger of death unless an abortion is performed, or if the pregnancy is a result of incest or rape. And in 1980, the United States Supreme Court held that states do not need to fund abortions that are not entitled to federal Medicaid reimbursement. And in 1995, the Minnesota Supreme Court struck down state law that prohibited medical assistance from covering abortions unless medically necessary to prevent the death of the mother or the pregnancy or a pregnancy that was a result of rape or incest on the ground that the law violated a woman's right to privacy under the Minnesota Constitution. Now, this has been 20 years ago, and I have had a lot of feedback from my constituents that they aren't happy that taxpayer funding goes to fund abortions. So I was very, very pleased to take up this bill because I figure that after 20 years, we need to revisit this and take another look at it. And since we do get so much feedback from our folks and our taxpayers, we really should do what the taxpayers want and see if we can't get a reconsideration on that judgment.
All right. Thank you, Representative Tice. Representative Lane. What? Lee Blaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to get a roll call on the bill.
Roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call.
And then, you know, I just want to make a comment. We've been through this, you know, so many times. Everybody knows how they're going to vote on it. It's not a mystery to anybody. But again, you know, kind of echoing a comment I made in the last committee, this is a really short session. We have lots of work we could be doing. It's deadlines. This bill is not going to be enacted because the governor is not going to sign it. The Senate is probably not going to even hear it, much less pass it. And so it's going nowhere, and yet we're doing, again, this just political gamesmanship. And there are a number of things that I really object to about this bill. One of them is that it discriminates, now that it's clarified, and Representative Tice, I think, didn't even really know to whom it was going to apply. Now I guess she's been told, and it's been made clear to her. But the bottom line is that this only applies to poor women. So women under this bill, women can get their constitutional right to an abortion depends on whether their what their source of insurance is. And their source of insurance is dependent on, of course, how much money they have. So poor women are being discriminated against and being told that they then cannot get an abortion under this bill. So that's one part of it. The other part of it is that this is a bill that is obviously designed to go to the Minnesota Supreme Court. That's pretty clear from the comments that Representative Tice made. It's pretty clear from the fact that it has the severability clause. It's pretty clear from the fact that the fiscal note doesn't, there's a zero fiscal note because it's assumed that it'll be found unconstitutional. So This is just another attack on women's rights to exercise their constitutional right to control their own bodies and decide when and whether to have children, and to substitute government deciding, Representative Tice, for government, because you're sitting here as a state representative saying that Minnesota government should decide that certain women should not be able to have an abortion. And instead of allowing women to make that decision by themselves. And I think that's really unfortunate that so often we talk around here about wanting to get government out of people's lives, smaller government, except when it comes to women's choice to have an abortion. And I just think this is wrong. I think we shouldn't be dealing with it. We certainly shouldn't be dealing with it this session. It's just another thing to get your ticket stamped by, you know, so that you can say, I am so anti-abortion, I did this bill. And I think that's, you know, at the expense of women who constantly feel attacked by these kind of bills. So that's my statement.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just briefly to respond to Representative Liebling, I would disagree that it's a political and gamesmanship and that it's going nowhere and that it's another thing to get your ticket stamped. You know the sensitivity of the nature and the pro-life movement and those who are pro-life. It's very emotional. It's very spiritual. It's about life. So it's not a gamesmanship. It's not political. Representative Tice is bringing this forward because she believes strongly in the pro-life issues and the unborn and the fact that taxpayers shouldn't be paying for it. So I don't think you should be putting words in her mouth and assuming that it's all just for games. I think that is wrong, and that's my opinion, and I'll be still from that.
Representative Pearson.
Just to add to that, Representative Liebling, I noticed you're the one who actually asked for the roll call vote. So if anyone's playing political games and doing the punch count, it would be from you this evening.
All right. All the questions. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do believe this is a personal decision, and it is a choice that each person needs to make for themselves in consultation with their own advisors and the people in their family and their medical providers, and that we shouldn't be making this choice as people around this table. We have an established policy that's been upheld by our Minnesota Supreme Court, but I'm interested in, on page 3 of the fiscal note, it's clear that they assume that this will go into litigation. It's assumed that that the courts, based on the fact that we haven't changed our Constitution, will probably enjoin this. It says such litigation could impact implementation and carry actual fiscal costs related both to the cost of litigation and the cost of any resolution of litigation. These costs are difficult to determine. But Mr. Chairman, or could anyone else give us some insight as to whether this is a cost of the Department of Human Services? Through the chargebacks from the Attorney General's office, if we have any sense of the type of the costs that are involved in a constitutional challenge. I'm not a lawyer, but I always have a sense that anything that goes into the courts is incredibly expensive and time-consuming and distracting from other resources. So do we have a sense? Does that come into our budget? Does that go to the state government finance budget? We need to alert them that we're potentially increasing costs there?
Sure. Well, I think, Representative, that any bill that we pass has the potential for litigation, and some have more potential than others. But the way that we handle that as a state is that we fund the Attorney General's office. We also have attorneys here at the House that have a budget to defend the laws that we have. For example, the litigations surrounding a couple of the federal state executive orders, but the governor in the past year, and those laws and executive decisions that have been defended were defended by the Attorney General, Lori Swanson, and their team. and those are built within that, built within the budget of the Attorney General. So that's generally how we handle it, and I'm not aware of circumstances where that is predicted in advance. And as to the you know, if the bill has no chance of being enacted into law, obviously there would be no cost for a challenge. If your assertion is that it has zero chance, I would say that it has at least a little better chance than Representative Lohmer's bill from the last committee hearing and Representative Mack's committee, because the governor actually sent out a pre-veto veto letter, which I've never gotten before, but Representative Lohmer got one earlier. So if that's kind of the new standard, I'd say there's a little better shot with this one than at least the last one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a follow-up. So if there is litigation, which this fiscal note says, and I've never seen that in a fiscal note before, that that's just an anticipated cost, is that charged back to the department? As I recall, the department does have some kind of transfers between it and the attorney generals. I mean, there is staff assigned to the agency, but I thought there was some interagency transfers that would be impacted by this, and should we be anticipating the need to set aside some money then to handle that?
I don't believe so, and Ms. Iverson has flagged something in the fiscal note that that I can just read, because of the nature of the resolution result, because of the difficulty of producing an estimate, no estimation of cost of litigation are included in this fiscal note. So it's just kind of an ambiguous way of saying that, but I don't know of any predetermined way of who would be accounting for that, and if I'm incorrect about that, I'm sure I will be corrected by somebody, but I know of no information that we've been given that would say that it would track that way, nor do I have any experience of that in the past.
Thank you. I think that it's something that we need to consider when we have very limited resources, and whether or not this is the best use of those.
Other questions? Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Dean.
Aye.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Aye.
Representative Liebling.
No.
Representative Loeffler.
No.
Representative Allen.
No.
Representative Backer.
Aye.
Representative Franson.
Yes.
Representative Grinhagen.
Yes.
Representative Halverson.
No.
Representative Hamilton. Representative Lane. Representative Lohmer.
Yes.
Representative Mack.
Yes.
Representative Murphy.
No.
Representative Purcell.
No.
Representative Pearson.
No.
Representative Schoen.
No, twice.
Representative Schumacher.
Aye.
Representative Zerwas.
Aye.
There being 10 ayes and 7 noes, the motion prevails. House File 607 is referred to the General Register as amended. Thank you all. I believe that concludes our agenda, and I want to apologize to the staff for making us stay late, also to the DFL members for making us come back. I do apologize, but we got through quickly. So we are adjourned.